did? You see what I did?
No. You're like this small.
I jumped into half.
That small, yeah, okay, thank you, Paul Rudd. That's the latest, that's Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. Welcome to Silver Screen Previews for February 17th, 2023. Also, we welcome you on Instagram Live and the Buzzsprout Podcast, which you can listen to all across different platforms. I'm your host once again, Rob Martin, and on the other side of the aisle, we'll welcome back returning co-host Tricia Rails. Hello, Tricia.
Hello, happy weekend.
We're talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp. This is typically, what is it, Ant-Man 3? Quantumania.
Yeah.
Ooh, so we saw a clip there between Paul Rudd and Catherine Newton. What did you think about this film, Tricia?
Well, I'm a huge Paul Rudd fan. I do love Paul Rudd. I find him incredibly alluring. And I like most of the things that he does.
Alluring.
So, of course, I was excited to watch this movie. And I do, I'm a fan somewhat of the Marvel Universe, but I do think that it is a little, there's a lot going on there.
Oh, yeah.
The Marvel Universe. But I'll be honest with you. I fell asleep.
You fell asleep?
I did. I wanted to like it so badly. I thought that it would be a really fun addition just because they're going into the quantum realm. And, you know, there's this whole thing in movies now to explore the, like, multiverses and different universes. In this case, we are exploring the quantum realm, which is still something I don't quite understand, even in the movie after they explained it. Somehow there are humans or humanoid-type creatures in this quantum realm. They don't really explain that. There's not a lot of backstory as to why things are the way they are, but there is a fun cameo in there. Bill Murray makes a brief cameo that was fun to see. And I love Michael Douglas. I think that Michelle Pfeiffer looks fantastic. Oh my God, she looks amazing.
She is using some kind of cream, some kind of lifting cream, something, some kind of special serum that's...
Whatever it is.
She's incredible.
I want it. I want it. overall, it had a star-studded cast. I think the acting was great. Evangeline Lilly's also wonderful. But to be completely honest with you, I was bored. And I didn't think it was really worth sitting through, so...
Interesting.
Did
you see the first one or the second one?
I did, and I thought they were entertaining and fun. And this one started out solid. I feel like it had a good, solid foundation at the beginning. It was funny. It was very Paul Rudd, with him narrating the beginning and about how his life is just so weird and his almost self-promotion. And, of course, then he walks into the cafe and they call him Spider-Man. And it's very self-deprecating and very funny.
Yeah.
Where I got lost is in the actual, when they go to the quantum realm, it's almost chaos. There's too much going on. There's all of these different things. It's too much. I felt like I was on acid, actually. And at one point, I think I just kind of zoned out, and I fell asleep. I did finish it, but I was bored. I'm going to be honest, I was bored.
You know, they're doing almost, 99% of this film or 98% of this film in front of a green screen?
Green. Factory. Yes.
I can understand that. No, that's completely an honest review, because the first two films, you have a variety of that. You're not constantly in this outer space, virtual reality world going on all around you. Here, it is completely that. So it's easy to focus out or subliminally to zone out in some kind of way or some kind of fashion. So give me your final verdict on this film.
Final verdict is, if you like the Marvel Universe, you're going to watch it anyway. So that's just a given. But I'm going to give it a thumbs down because I do think they were reaching. They should have stopped too. That's just my opinion, but yeah.
Well, okay, so basically, Tricia Rails, you give this movie a thumbs down on Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. On the other hand, give this a thumbs up.
Yeah. All right.
You give it a thumbs down, I give it a thumbs up. I'm surprised.
We agree to disagree.
Yeah, we agree to disagree. I wanted not to like this movie completely, but I saw a lot of the characters, the different actors in this, that elevate the film instead of dragging it down or have the effects just completely just submerge you into, like, oof, I can't take it anymore. I gotta see more, of the actors. And that's what you got here. It's a fantastic ride. I think you lose yourself, for the most part, in the 2 hours. The key character here is Janet, played by, Michelle Pfeiffer. She's the key to the entire movie by what she knows, what she gets into, and how they're supposed to get out. Because it's really a family affair, and how every different character in that family has a key role in order to get out of the quantum realm, which is a cross between Star Wars, that kind of universe, and Farscape from the early 2000s. There's just so many characters. There's a very key scene there in the cantina. They ripped that off of Star Wars. That was okay. That was funny. The different monsters. I like how when Michael Douglas put his hands in order to drive that spaceship.
Right.
And then Michelle Pfeiffer says, "Oh, just make believe you're setting up the turkey. You're stuffing the turkey."
That was pretty funny.
Yeah, so that was funny. And they called the other guy a broccoli. Oh, that was fun too. I just think that it's a lot of fun. You lose yourself in it. So all in all, I give it a thumbs up. You'll enjoy this, especially with the kids. They'll have a good time here.
It is funny. I won't detract from that. It is a funny movie. It is funny.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It lost Trisha.
It lost you. It lost Trisha. It's not your fault. It's the movie's fault. All right, let's move on, folks. The next film on Silver Screen Previews tonight is something called At Midnight, which is a rom-com. So in this one, we have Diego Boneta, Monica Barbaro, and Anders Holm. Despite their radically different lives, Alejandro and Sophie begin to secretly meet at midnight. So this is a Paramount Plus film that was out streaming last week, and it's directed by Jonah Feingold. And I believe here's a clip. New generation of actors there. That's Diego Boneta and Monica Barbaro. Okay, Trisha Rails, your take on At Midnight.
I don't know. Maybe I'm in a bad mood this week, but here we go.
You were just in Hawaii. What is going on here?
It rained every day.
Damn it. Don't blame the weatherman.
So, I first I'm going to poke at the title. So, the whole premise of the movie is that these two secret lovers have to rendezvous at midnight so that they go undetected. But yeah. I think they only meet at midnight maybe two times.
Yeah, right? Like, everything else.
Wait. It's not like this. We're going to meet at midnight every month, every day this month, or even every day this week, or even every day this weekend. I think they do it twice.
Yeah.
So it builds up a thing.
They lie to you. They lie to you.
They lie to you. I will say that Anders Holm, if anybody was a fan of Workaholics, you know, he is just delightfully cheesy and horrible in this movie in the way that you want him to be. Yeah. So he knocks it out of the park. You know, he plays the Hollywood star and the love interest of our main character, and basically he's a player, he's a cheater, he's a bad guy, but you know, he's super wonderful in the movies. And so you know, we see this relationship devolve, as it were, and now she's moving on to find herself while they're down in Mexico on set of their film. And honestly, I had a roller coaster watching this movie, because I'm not going to lie, when I started, I thought, oh God, this is not going to be good. And I really, really didn't like, you know, Monica Barbaro's character. I thought she was self-entitled. I thought she was kind of rude. I thought she was kind of full of herself. Even though she is getting her heart broken, there was a part of me that did not empathize or root for her.
Yeah.
So I didn't really connect with her. But the saving grace, and there was saving grace, is that Diego Boneta's acting. This is a fantastic actor. Being that the script of this movie really wasn't the best script, it was very Hallmarky. I'm actually shocked this movie is rated R. There's no reason this movie should be rated R, except for maybe her brassy assistant, who is a little, you know, a little wild, a little crazy. But other than that, there's nothing in this film that would, in my opinion, more an R rating. But Diego Boneta has a more complex character than any of the other characters. The rest of them are pretty vapid and pretty, you know, Hallmark-y.
Yeah.
But Diego's character actually has a backstory, and he has a family, and you get to meet the family, and you can see the stuff that he is struggling with, and he really captures the audience. And that's what won me back, I'm going to be honest, because the other characters I really hated, but I actually liked his character. And then when he starts to get Sophie to come around and actually become a person and not this celebrity, then you start to see her shine. And I think that Monica, is it Barbaro or Barbaro? I don't know if I'm saying her last name.
Monica Barbaro.
Barbaro.
Yes.
I think she is a phenomenal actress because of the fact that I hated her so much at the beginning of the movie, and by the end of the movie, I really, really liked her. And I even liked her character within the movie. She's a movie star, so she plays a character, and she's killer even at that character. So as much as I thought I was going to give you a thumbs down through the first part of the movie,
right,
I flipped it around. And I actually ended up liking it. Now, the ending I thought was a little too swift and a little cheesy. It almost was like, and we're done. You know, it has all the building and all of the, you know,
yeah,
the very tropic rom-com. They even make fun of themselves. They say these lines, like, I'm standing here in front of you. You know, it's very, they do it on purpose. And then it's over. But would I recommend it on a week of Valentine's? Yeah, I would.
Interesting.
Yeah, I watch terrible Hallmark movies that I could do that.
All right, so overall, it becomes a thumbs up, correct, for Trisha Rails.
Stick with it.
There you go. You know, and I agree with you at the beginning. I was just, what is going on here? This is going to be a terrible movie. Because rom-coms nowadays usually have to have this. They have to have that. They have to have certain things in order for it to work. In this, you can see the genuineness of Diego Boneta's character and also Monica Barbaro's character as she goes through different phases. I like that. And how in the end they mesh together to form what looks like a genuine romance. None of this crap. She gets diffused by his sincerity in his character, being a humble, hotel assistant manager kind of job where he's dealing with so many different things. And he's got to deal with her. But the way they meet in the first act is where I think they disarm each other. And of course, not a better place than the shower when you have no towels, you know? So, yeah, that worked really well. I was really surprised how that really just ignited everything. I was like, okay, this is going off to a nice thing. You have some of the exterior characters, which were really annoying. I thought that they were either annoying or were not really necessary in the story, but I could see where they started to put things together. I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm focused on Diego, and I'm focused on Monica. So that's what I saw here. It was really a great chemistry, a lot of lovely cinematography, and the music also is key here because it's kind of cheesy, but it adds to the story, and that's what I saw that too. And the key scene I thought that was the scene where they have, when they go to Mexico and they meet Diego's parents. And that whole deal, wow. Okay, and that's where you start seeing cracks in the foundation. And that set up the third act. But overall, look, it's cheesy, it's crappy sometimes at the beginning, but it makes up for it way later on in the movie. And that's why, in the end, I give this movie a thumbs up for the fantastic acting of Diego Boneta and Monica Barbaro. So yeah, very good film there for a Valentine's Day week. All right, let's move on. I hope. Let's see what happens. I'm just going to, I'm going to do what I got to do here. The next film on Silver Screen Previews is something called Sharper, which was out on limited theater release last week, but this week it's out on Apple TV Plus. Stars Julianne Moore, Sebastian Stan, John Lithgow, Justice Smith, and Brianna Middleton. Motivations are suspect and expectations are turned upside down as a con artist takes on Manhattan billionaires. This is directed by Benjamin Caron. It's an R-rated drama. It's called Sharper. We both saw it. What was your take on it, Trisha?
Well, first of all, kind of talking like when we were talking about Sharon Stone earlier, I don't know what cream Julianne Moore is using, but I want it. She is fantastic. She looks really, really great in this movie, and she's also, as always, she's compelling as an actress. She does a really great job in this film. So this is one of those, it's like Inception. It's like Lucky Number 11. It's like a David Mamet play. It's got all of these complex characters. What's the one with Kevin Spacey, the Kaiser Sose? The Usual Suspects.
The Usual Suspects, right, correct.
Yes, this is one of those movies that strives for the complex character build from all the different standpoints of the character, but it's all about conning. They're con artists, and
that's right.
Every person in here is playing a key role in conning someone else, and it ends up being this twisted, convoluted circle, really focused in on a very, John Lithgow, who's one of my favorite actors, is only in the film briefly,
yes,
but really he is the foundation for which the movie is set, because he is this, you know, billionaire.
He's the guy.
He's the guy. That's the what yeah. everybody is. He's the mark, really.
He's got the moolah.
He's got the moolah. And I realized when we watched this, you know, it's no longer cool to be a millionaire. You have to be a billionaire. Nobody cares about you if you're a millionaire.
Yeah. That's, you could, like, win that in the lotto or something, you know. Now yeah. everybody's, like, looking for billionaires.
Billionaire? Don't waste my time. Billionaire? Okay, let's talk.
Yeah.
So, Brianna Middleton, who plays Sandy in the movie, is absolutely phenomenal. She, to me... You know, Justice Smith is great. He's been in a lot of movies. I've seen him. You know, I actually really liked him in the Pikachu movie. you know, he's more well-known. He's been seen. But I had not seen Brianna Middleton before. And she's captivating. She's a very good actress. And she plays this part so well. And I don't obviously want to give away the movie, because this is one of those twist and turns movies that does have a twist.
Yeah.
I won't say that the twist is shocking. I think you feel it coming. The buildup is there. And you're not terribly surprised.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's still satisfactory, and you know, Sebastian Stan plays a pretty good greasy, oily guy. You know, he's supremo creepo, and he's good at it.
Yeah, that's really right. Yeah, without a doubt.
So yeah, I thought it was a great movie. I thought it was really fun to watch. I thought it was a good back and forth of characters. Could it have been developed a little better or a little more? Sure. I think there are parts that could have been improved, but overall, I think it was a movie I would recommend, and I would definitely watch it again, because I think there were things I missed on the first time around.
All right, so a thumbs up from Trisha Rails on Sharper. Very good.
Yep.
This is a movie about cons, conning cons, conning cons, conning cons. Look, exactly. As Trisha says, Sebastian Stan is great here, no doubt about it. And Julianne Moore is vicious, as she always is, when she wants to be. And that's the greatness about Julianne Moore, that she can morph into this really nice person. And then before you know it, she's jumping on Sebastian Stan's lap and you know, having sex with him. So you can go from that to a conniving person just after the money. So you got everything here. I think the script is very intertwined, very, very well done. The turning point, I think, here is when the character of Sandy reappears at the billion-dollar house estate, you know, on the Upper West Side. And, you know, Tom is really interested in trying to recoup her, trying to get her back on her feet. And I was trying, like, why? What's this? Why? Don't you think that he would have just, like, let it go and moved on? But...
And it was, what, for $350,000 with being a billionaire, you'd think he would let it go. You would think he would let it go.
Yeah. But... Yeah. That, to me, was very not believable. I thought that was a real stretch in the plot, that they would go to that just to make Julianne Moore's pale skin even more paler at that moment. I mean, come on. It's just, wow. That twist ending was really not believable at all. And the security, I call them security guards. I call them the protectors of the estate. Those guys, those three guys.
Yeah.
Like, why did they have so much power? It seemed like they were like FBI guy or something.
Well, and I don't want to give anything away, but there was one scene. So my husband's an airline pilot, and I looked at him and I said, is it easy to get off the plane once you're seated? And he's like, not generally. Why? And I was like, just wondering. That's all I'm going to say. It's not super easy to get off the plane once you're seated. So,
yeah.
But we'll leave that part alone. And
agreed. Yeah, no sense there. No sense whatsoever. The plot has too many holes with the Sandra character, because you see her appear, then she disappears. Then it's about this story about Max, and then it's all about, you know, Julianne Moore's character. So they just keep going from one to connect all the dots. In the end, though, it's a big letdown the way it turned out, the ending in the third act. Like, where'd they go with that? Why? That made no sense at all. How could, I'm not going to give anything away, but how could that possibly happen? That makes no sense. Zero. So, based on that, I mean, you have to judge for yourself. Go watch the movie for yourself. It's called Sharper. It's on Apple TV Plus. I'd give this movie a thumbs down just for that, because it was leading me like, wow, this is great, this is great, this is great, and then just falls off the cliff. Man, I was just so disappointed in that ending. But anyway, come to your own conclusions. I give it a thumbs down. Trisha gives it a thumbs up. So there you go. All right, our fourth and final film tonight on Silver Screen Previews is Your Place or Mine. This is the return from hiatus for Reese Witherspoon and Ashton Kutcher. So in this one, It's a PG-rated romantic comedy directed by Aileen Brosh McKenna. It's on Netflix last week. Two long-distance best friends change each other's lives when she decides to pursue a lifelong dream, and he volunteers to keep an eye on her teenage son. All right, Tricia, what was your evaluation of Your Place or Mine?
Right now, Rob, we agree on one and disagree on two, so I'm curious to see where we land on number four. First of all, it's fun to see a rom-com with people in their 40s,
yeah.
not 20. That's always fun. And, of course, very familiar faces, Reese Witherspoon and Ashton Kutcher. And it has all of the elements of your standard classic rom-com of the early 2000s, I feel like, which is good with me. I like that. It's got that good feeling of the buildup we used to watch. Things have kind of changed since then, and I feel like this goes back to some of those old tropes that they use. I loved this movie, and that is probably not that surprising, being that these are actors I grew up watching. They're, you know, people that I've seen in multiple, you know, movies playing together. I don't think I would have realized that Reese Witherspoon and Ashton Kutcher could have so much chemistry on screen, but they really, really do. You know, they play best friend who were briefly lovers, but more friends. She lives in Los Angeles. He lives in New York City. She's wholesome, homemaker, single mom. He's jet-setting, rich guy, sterile apartment, no kids, no life of his own, really, love life. He can't commit to anything, but, you know, six months into every relationship, including jobs, he fails. She ends up needing him, and they switch places. She goes and stays at his place. He stays at her place. He ends up walking with her kid. And her kid desperately needs a break from her because she's a great mother, but she's also a hovering mother and isn't really letting this 13-year-old boy live. She's so scared to death that she's going to lose him that she never lets him live a life. So it's fun to see, because Ashton Kutcher, as always, is very playful and silly and funny, and it's fun to watch him with this little boy. Or he's not a little boy, he's a teenager, but, you know, bring him out of his shell and really show him what it's like to be a kid, you know, actually live as a kid and have fun. You know, some of the side characters, Steve Zahn was a really fun appearance for me. I had no idea he was in the movie. So
me neither.
It was great, right? He's hysterical. He is just as weird as he always is in every movie. I swear Steve Zahn just plays himself in every movie he's ever been in. It reminds me of the Saving Silverman days. He's the same character. He's wonderful. And then, of course, Tig Notaro, one of my favorite comedians. She is hysterical. She plays the perfect, you know, straight man to the comedian, as far as she's just dry and she just drops zingers all the time. Just, you know, they just roll off and they're great. And of course, Zoe Chow as Minka. She's this vapid New Yorker rich person that very much contrasts with Reese Witherspoon's down to earth character.
Yes.
There wasn't a moment in the movie where I wasn't engaged. There wasn't a moment in the movie where I was bored. I didn't fall asleep. And I actually rooted for both of them the whole time, and I even got a tear out of me. You know, I even was like, oh, I like this. So for me, Valentine's Day week, this was a major thumbs up. Major thumbs up.
All right, so thumbs up from Tricia Rails on Your Place or Mine, the latest flick from Reese Witherspoon and Ashton Kutcher. I, unfortunately, have to disagree with you, Tricia.
We are at odds today, Rob.
Yes. Oh, look, I'm telling you, I thought the best thing about this movie was the fact that they included so many different songs from the Cars soundtracks from their albums.
All the Cars. Rick Ocasek made a lot of money on this movie.
Yes, I'm sure he did. Somebody's collecting the money. I thought, honestly, this was one of the most empty rom-coms in years. I thought the character of the kid was just so, devoid of any real emotion or real meaning there. I mean, you get stuck with the kid, yeah, but, I mean, to be such a boring kid, unfortunately, he didn't have any, you know, he wasn't really like a kid that is excitable. We're not talking about something like Problem Child or anything like that. But here, you got to be a little bit more uppity, a little bit more entertaining in order to keep the story going. Reese Witherspoon is okay. She's good here. That's not the problem. I think that Ashton Kutcher has actually dropped a step in acting ability. Just one step. because it showed right here. And maybe it's because of the poorly written script. I mean, you have a lot of the different things here going on between the East Coast and the West Coast, the switching of that. I'm like, okay, all right, you know, it's an okay story, but it's not something that, oh, because you're going to do this, I'm going to love this movie. No. And New York just seems so beautiful here and so majestic when that's totally the contrary to what's going on right now in the streets of New York. What the hell are they doing here? Were they sanitized the streets in order to film this thing?
They cleaned it.
That's a joke.
I know you live in New York City, yeah. So you know the...
Where's the garbage?
Where are the bums?
We
can pretend that New York is still opulent and beautiful and shiny and sparkly.
Yeah, right. Maybe like 10 years ago. Yeah, okay. I mean, that's just way too much gloss on New York, people. L.A. looked okay, you know, as it usually looks with the mountains and the hills and all that stuff. It just drags too much, this movie. It just drags on too much. I think that they should have cut a lot off of this movie, at least maybe 15, 20 minutes, honestly. And, yeah, unfortunately, I wanted to like the movie, but it just didn't float for me, unfortunately. So I have to give this movie a thumbs down on your place or mine.
All right.
I know, it's not my fault, Trish. I just, you know, I thought we were going to agree. I thought you were going to just like, yeah, you know what, Rob? I agree with you. Your place or mine is a bunch of crap. I didn't like it.
We only agreed on one movie this entire time.
Yeah, it's the movie I was actually surprised that we were going to agree with.
I know, same.
Trisha.
Yeah.
We've had a bad week here. Let's see. Let's see what happens next time we have you on. Because next time, Trisha, you're going to be joining us for the group chat on March the 10th, which is the Scream 6 release. And we'll be doing a review of the Scream movie franchise, the entire franchise, on March 10th. So join myself, Trisha Rails, Heather Lattiser, and Caitlin Skinner for that show on March the 10th. Trisha, before we get on out of here, give us your social media coordinates, please.
I'm on Insta at Trisha Rails, and that's it.
That's it. Nice and sweet. Very good. All right. So on behalf of Trisha Rails, I'm Rob Martin. We'll catch you next time right here on Silver Screen Previews.